The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
Well, this week saw several police shootings, one of them fatal, after a man naked ran into the street in the downtown east side bearing a knife or sword. The Vancouver police shot him and killed him. That came just days after police shot another man who barricaded himself in his downtown east side apartment. And advocates are saying that police, once again, need to be held accountable for their response to mental health crises and people in distress. Here's Meenakshi Minow, a criminalization and policing advocate with Pivot Legal Society. Meenakshi, thank you so much for coming back on The Pulse with us. Great to have you here.
Thanks so much, David. Really appreciate the chance to chat today.
Yeah, and welcome to 2021. Quite a wild ride in just the first week so far.
Definitely. And I'm sure we're going to talk about everything that the police have been up to so far.
Yeah. You know, we have a lot of Vancouver police news just in this last couple days. But the one I wanted to start with is the death of a man in the downtown east side. Shot by police while outside his apartment. Could you tell me what we know about this incident?
So last Tuesday, January 5th, there was a fatal police shooting that took place in the downtown east side at the intersection of East Hastings and Princess Street. We don't have a lot of publicly available information about this. I want to acknowledge the work of folks at VanDoo, who've been carrying out a community investigation to try and get their own facts in the absence of information. But from some recorded footage that's been made available, we see a man who is clearly in the state of extreme mental distress, naked on the street, who at some point has a large object in his hands. It's not clear what the object is. To me, but he was shot by police officers at 5 a.m. He was shot multiple times. And again, very clearly in a marked state of distress.
There is a vigil being held by VanDoo on Tuesday at 2 p.m. at 380 East Hastings. And VanDoo is saying that in the name of protecting property and profit, our lives as drug users are made expendable by the VPD. The police are the crisis in the downtown east side.
I think it's a very accurate statement. You know, just before this fatal shooting occurred last week, there was another police shooting 2 days earlier on Sunday, January 3rd. Fortunately, that incident was not fatal, although the victim was transported to hospital. That incident also occurred just a few blocks away from the Tuesday shooting. And less than 2 months ago, there was another fatal police incident just outside the downtown east side at a Tim Hortons near Main and Terminal Street. So in that incident, the person was killed because police were called by Tim Hortons staff after they had spent an extended period in the bathroom. From Pivot's work, we know that a lot of people who experience homelessness rely on bathrooms like in retail or food service outlets because they don't have those facilities. And of course, that's all made worse by COVID. But these are just three recent incidents.
It's not, of course, the first year that we've seen police responding with guns to mental health cases. And there's the case in Knight and 41st a few years ago, shot carrying a piece of wood, and people called the police saying there's a man in distress here, and they shot him within a minute of arriving.
Yes, and that's Tony Dew, who was killed by police.
That's right. And we've had an inquiry into this. There's been recommendations. What has been recommended so far for police?
So the Tony Dew recommendations, I'm just going to pull up what Pivot worked on, because at that time we did support a lawyer named Francis Mahon, who served as counsel to the family of Tony Dew. And of course, I also want to recognize the family of Jaden, who was killed by Maple Ridge or Ridge Meadows RCMP last year. Actually, he was killed in 2019.
It's obviously a pattern, and I think we see it across Canada and across North America that we have, this is our mental health response unit, is essentially the same unit that shows up to any other crime, even if a crime is not being committed.
And I think there's this like importance of understanding that for people who are in mental distress, who are feeling unsafe, who are not necessarily experiencing reality as we know it, armed officers showing up just escalates a situation. So I wanted to just return to the piece around the Tony Doo inquiry and share a little bit about what Pivot had recommended at that time. Specifically, VPD needed to prioritize scene containment strategies so that when someone is experiencing distress and may be a potential threat to the public, there needs to be an effort at containing the scene. And again, if you are worried that someone is in danger or a danger to someone else, there are ways to approach that situation and make sure that people are kept safe. And that doesn't need to escalate to the point of shooting someone. We also asked the VPD to conduct research and speak with experts on the use of shields as a potential containment and de-escalation strategy. So one issue that's been raised in the week since the shooting occurred is that people are really confused as to why other supposed non-lethal interventions weren't used. We know that things like tasers can be fatal, but I've heard from folks living in the downtown east side that they're questioning why the response was 5 shots.
And one of the police have claimed that the person was carrying either some kind of a sword or a knife. You say the video doesn't show that. We haven't confirmed that. Is it possible that for a person in distress, even with a weapon like that, a non-firearm, that you could contain that?
Again, this goes to like a broader question around how many systems failed in order for someone to escalate to this point. This man was clearly in distress in the building. The windows of his apartment were smashed. He broke through them. And I can appreciate why folks are rightfully worried about safety when there's talk of like an edged weapon or a bladed weapon. But again, as I mentioned when I spoke with another media outlet earlier, we also know that folks living in the downtown east side often experience high understandable levels of distress, right? Whether it's a combination of poverty, lack of stable housing, mental health, trauma, racism, colonialism, like these things all function together to create crisis. And when we're looking to the VPD to enter a dynamic situation, it's important that they have the sensitivity and understanding to actually appropriately address it, right? Because sometimes folks can be talked down. There may be trusted people who should have been reached out to in advance. They may have been receiving inadequate support, whether from their housing or healthcare provider. Again, right now, a lot of this information is unknown, so I'm just speculating. And this was another piece of the recommendations around the Tony Doo inquiry. And of course, when Tony Doo was murdered by police, he, I believe, was holding like a 2x4 in the street. I think it's really important to, again, appreciate that folks don't just wake up one day and act in an agitated way like this, right? It's a culmination of inadequate care, inadequate resources, you know, failures of mental health, social services, healthcare. So there's a piece of this that, of course, police hold as the ones who fired the final bullets. But we also have to look at how people aren't necessarily able to access crisis or acute mental health services.
Yeah, tell me more about that. I mean, it doesn't seem to matter what your socioeconomic status is. There's nothing provided in Canada short of a few drop-in programs or helplines.
Yeah, I think the issue is that we, so I can speak around the downtown east side a bit better, but you know, there are some limited mental health teams that are available if you meet the criteria, which typically includes a certain threshold of psychiatric diagnosis. They're not necessarily culturally appropriate or culturally responsive. Often the care provided there is done through involuntary means, whether it's extended leave or certification. So, there's clearly not going to be a lot of trust with that kind of program. People are forced to contend with a patchwork of crisis lines or drop-in programs or peer-led support groups, all of which can be really powerful. And I think, again, peer-led support is really an important aspect of this. But we need to fully resource those programs, right, so that they're available to people 24/7. As you and I both know, people don't schedule their breakdowns, right? They don't schedule them within the 9-to-5 week. And we need to be able to invest in a 24/7 resource that is not dependent on policing.
You know, you mentioned the police arriving on scene and kind of that firing the final shots, and then there being kind of the systemic lead up to that. Can the police play some kind of a role in addressing that lead up as well before the, like, is there some way that dispatch could be changed or the types of deployment of officers or training, or is that beyond the purview of a department?
I don't think that police should be involved in delivering mental health services. I think even the police themselves say they don't want to be in that business. When we get to a point where the only person you can call is 911 to send an officer to either take someone down or deliver them to an emergency room, we need to take a step back and look at how non-carceral approaches can be implemented. And I don't think that the police should be part of that. I don't think that they should be part of everyday mental health care.
Unfortunately, when you call 911, you don't get to choose the types of officers that are the first responders, or whether they're going to take a health approach or a criminalization approach.
Mm-hmm. And, often people will cite initiatives like CAR 87, CAR 88. These are the specialized mental health vehicles. But that's only one or two cars. Again, it's armed officers who may be accompanied by a social worker or a psychiatric nurse. But it's also an armed officer, right? And for folks who are low income, people of color, immigrants, refugees, indigenous folks, queer folks, like an armed police officer is probably one of the last people you want to see, even if you're not in an acute crisis.
Is there an aspect of the presence of an officer can escalate a situation, can actually cause someone to go into worse distress?
Definitely. I think for, many of those groups that I just mentioned and many other marginalized folks as well, they have negative experiences with the police, right? There's an abundance of information about that, whether it's arbitrary and illegal street stops, whether it's police treating you poorly, confiscating your belongings, confiscating your drugs or your harm reduction supplies. It doesn't engender a good relationship. And then on one hand, you're being told that, this is the person who is responsible for criminalizing you, for breaching you, for arresting you. But you also need to trust them when you're at your worst to take care of you.
For all the debate about policing and then kind of all the questions about the details of all these incidents, it's just so important to remember there's a person on the other end of this, a person who died or was hospitalized. In this case, the still unnamed person, known in the community, though, who had loved ones mourning him. And then there's also the people who with good intention, called the police. And I was just looking back on some of the Tony Dew inquiry stuff, and one of the witnesses who testified just talked about how traumatized they were from having called the police, hoping to get help for this man, obviously in distress with a 2x4. And that's a scar that's been left, in addition to the ones on Tony's family.
And again, I don't want to guilt or shame folks around that decision. I think it's important to really maintain that systemic analysis that multiple systems fail when the police become emergency mental health responders. I can't imagine carrying the guilt of being the one who made that call simply because you didn't have anyone else to call. That's so heartbreaking. And I know that oftentimes it's family members, right, who call the police, and maybe they've done that in the past because that's what they do when their loved one is acting out. But now we also see numerous instances of wellness checks turning fatal. We only need to think back to last year, the, you know, tragic and preventable deaths of Chantal Moore, of Ijaz Ahmed Chowdhury, of Rodney Levi, and now, you know, in our own community here in Vancouver. I think that, like, sometimes this discourse becomes about, like, how much, like, police failed or, like, police suck. And, you know, I will say that, like, the death of someone in mental distress is a failure by police, but it's also a failure of numerous other systems, including health, social services, right? Because oftentimes folks are interacting with multiple systems and all they're finding is closed doors.
Turn to another incident, and this is actually kind of an ironic one since you're a criminalization and policing advocate. The police officer that was criminally charged today with 7 counts of drug trafficking, theft, and possession of controlled substances. They filed these charges, but this was an officer who actually broke the law and was dealing drugs, apparently, with a dealer in Surrey.
Right. This is the former officer, Neil Logan. Yeah, really curious story. What's notable to me is that there's no mention of his any charges related to domestic violence.
He was charged with domestic assault earlier, but it wasn't mentioned in today's press conference by the police.
The allegations of violence against women date back to 2014. I mean, beyond that, I'm very curious about how the police department addresses the other officers who, you know, some folks must have been aware of what was going on. And I know that this is an issue that's not new to VPD. Similarly, when Detective Jim Fisher's predatory behavior came to light and he was also charged and convicted, I believe, there was a finding that fellow officers may have helped him to obstruct the misconduct investigation.
And in his case, he was actually in the unit protecting children from sexual exploitation, and it turned out that he was involved with some of the youth.
Perpetuating sexual exploitation as
exactly.
Well. There's like this impulse to be like, okay, great, the police found a predator, they found someone who was harming people. But I think for me, again, as a campaigner, it raises broader questions around what's the workplace culture? How are people who are, you know, doing unethical, illegal, and or predatory things able to carry on for years at a time? And we're also, you know, we're not really getting at the core issue, right? Like, of course, fire cops who do bad things, sure. But more broadly, I think it's another reminder that we need a rapid and radical shift away from criminalization. These instances of police acting with impunity are not infrequent, right? We've just cited 2. There's also an investigation into VPD officers' behavior at KT Tent City in Strathcona Park. Where could we better spend public dollars? And how could we use those public dollars to expand our vision of public safety and actually protect each other and resource our communities to address harm?
In the year ahead, Meenakshi, how are you going to be at Pivot Legal pushing on those issues?
Well, at the end of 2020, we saw a big push around defunding the VPD. Pivot was signatory to a letter that called on City Council to cut the VPD budget by 50% in 2022. I know it's a lofty goal, but I also think that we have the opportunity to like reprioritize community-led safety initiatives. There is apparently going to be work underway on a motion that Jean Swanson, presented to council last year. And so I look forward to contributing to that work and really driving home why defunding the police is not about taking away from public safety, but actually an opportunity to like invest in evidence-based interventions, whether that's peer-led access to safe supply, whether it's access to housing, peer counseling, emergency mental health supports, all of these things that we're frankly not able to fund because police budgets have ballooned.
Well, I think it's a good place to end. Thank you so much for your expertise and your thoughts on these issues.
Thanks so much, David, and always appreciate your coverage of these important issues.
Take care. I really appreciate it. Happy New Year. And that was Meenakshi Minow, a criminalization and policing campaigner with Pivot Legal Society. If you want more information about the Vancouver Area Network's drug users vigil for the man killed by the VPD last Tuesday, it's happening today, Tuesday, at 2 p.m. at Vandu's offices, 380 East Hastings Street.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.